the way I look at what we're about to discuss is not as a musar shmooze. At any point, if while I'm talking or discussing things, it sounds for a second that I'm giving musar or poking a finger or anything, I'm really, really not. I'm presenting a question for all of us. I'm presenting a difficult thing about human beings that you could ask on any human being on the planet, something that is hard to understand, and we're going to try to come to understanding it. It's a psychological discussion. If, and I think such a thing once happened before, if the Coca-Cola company were to make an announcement and say that they made a mistake, something happened in one of the factories, and poison was put into either a bottle or a can of Coke somewhere. One out of their trillion bottles and trillion cans that they have, one of them has poison in it. One of them has poison in it. We don't know which one. What do you think would happen? So when these type of things happened in the past, no one bought Coke then. Everyone stopped. Maybe a few crazy, you know, people or whatever it is, but most people, the sales of Coca-Cola went down tremendously. Because people, human beings, are generally nervous. They don't want to take a risk. Even if it's one in a billion, they don't want to take a risk. When there's a siren, it's a time of war, and there's a siren, and you know that there's some rocket coming in. What are the chances? You might not have had to think about this in America, but in Israel, you think, what are the chances that's going to hit where you are? One in a million, one more than a million. And everybody's nervous, everybody goes to bomb shelters, and if you don't, then we look at you like you're irresponsible and that wasn't appropriate, and if you're not running with your kids there, so you're not a good parent. In other words, we're very nervous even for a one in a million chance of a danger. That's human nature. That's how we work. When you take out insurance on your house, your houses in Mirat Hashem, when you take out insurance, you coat, you travel somewhere, and when you're going to travel somewhere, you take out insurance. So if you look at the different things that a person is willing to pay a lot of money for on a regular basis for many years, they're willing to pay a lot of money for the chance that if an earthquake happens, if a tornado happens, if a fire happens, things that after a while, some of the things that you're paying for, you don't really think, what are the chances are that you think that it's going to happen, but you're willing to put down money because you're concerned that maybe that thing will happen. So why is it we find this strange discrepancy? It doesn't make sense logically that when it comes to fear of after a person dies, right? Most of the world, more than 50% of the world for over 3,000 years have believed that a person is going to face Din v'cheshbon, a person is going to pass judgment after they leave this world, and that's going to affect them eternally afterwards. And the things that they do in this world are important, they're being watched, they're being recorded, and he's going to have to pass judgment. More than 50% of the world has believed this for over 3,000 years. The chances of that being correct, even if we're not 100% believers, but we all would agree that there's some chance that it's actually true. So why do we find that we're not nervous about these things? That we're not scared about them? Even religious people, even us, who we keep mitzvahs and we try to stay away from averos, but we don't do it with a nervousness. We're not worried. We're not scared. We don't have the feeling that we have when there's a one in a million chance that the bomb will hit where we're hitting, or that that we're going to buy that can of Coke. We do it because we want to do the right thing. It's more of a logical thing, but we don't live with a certain nervousness or concern. When we're waiting for an acceptance letter to find out if we got accepted to a certain university, we got accepted to a certain medical school, we're very nervous. Until we hear that response that we got accepted, no matter how good our grades are, we're nervous. We want to see that we're accepted, because this is going to affect us and matters, and we're concerned about it. So why aren't we concerned when, here it is, we're living a religious life, we believe that what the Torah teaches us is correct, we make so many adjustments in our life for that. If somebody were to hold a gun to our head and say, would you give up your life, you know, for Torah mitzvahs, whatever, we would let ourselves be shot if it was a situation of either, you know, do this sin that you have to die for or die, we would die for it. So then, why is it though that we're not worried when we're approaching, when the Torah tells us on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we're going to be judged, and our future is being held, and it's going to be decided at this time of judgment. Why aren't we afraid of that? Why isn't that something that concerns us, that worries us? We'll go through the motions maybe of tshuva, but because we push ourselves. We're not naturally worried about such a thing, even though we find that human nature is specifically to be worried. When Torah Chag goes to Eilat once a year, and Rabbi Ifra, myself, we joined this trip. Rabbi Zinkin, you went to it? So, one thing that Rabbi Ifra and I have done in the last couple of years is that we join a group of guys that go into this haunted house late at night in Eilat, the first night or the second night, at like 12 o'clock at night, 1 o'clock in the morning. You go into the group of like 5 or 6 guys, and you get to this haunted house, and you hear like screaming and shrieking and crying and growling and woofs and all these terrifying things. Before you even walk in, you're just getting close to them. Like, no, I don't want to do it. I don't want to go. Everyone myself, we're like the scaredest, but everyone's scared. And you go in with a group of 6 people and you push yourself to do this because why? You know that you're not in danger. You know nothing's going to happen to you. And you go into this haunted house, and everyone's grabbing onto each other. And guys that would never curse in front of a rabbi are shrieking every last curse word that they know at every last second. And a rabbi who would never lose himself in front of his tummy them is almost crying and grabbing like onto the guy next to him, like, no, I changed my mind, I want to go back, things like that. And everyone's just like losing up because we're terrified. And if you ask anybody, what are the chances that your back hurt? We'll all say 100% zero. I have no thought that I'm going to get hurt at all. By the way, Rabbi Fuchs, the way he walks through these things, is he walks through, not scared at all, pointing out where all those video cameras are and how the whole thing works. He's not scared at all. And we'll get back to that, why Rabbi Fuchs isn't scared at all. But Ephraim, myself, and all the Torah Chag guys that go in, we're all pishing in our pants, terrified. But if you ask us at any point along the way, even when we're crying, do you think anything will happen? The answer is 100% no. And when we're approaching Yom Kippur, or we're approaching the end of our life at some point, 50, 60 years down, whatever it is, for us, a few hundred, whatever it is, but we're approaching some judgment that will affect us eternally. If you ask me at any moment, is there something to be concerned about, I'll say very much yes. And the more money you have, be more concerned. But I would agree that there's some percentage that I am in some type of a danger, that what I do really matters. And yet, we're not scared. We're not worried. We're not grabbing onto anything. We're not crying. How does that make sense? Just psychologically, what is it about a human being that when you know, you're watching a movie, okay? You're watching a movie, and the guy is, I saw this thing of a guy walking on a tightrope across the Grand Canyon. And it's famous, like, you know he makes it across, but you're like this, you don't want to look, and you're scared, you're looking at a movie that you know never happened. It's not like something that really walked across, like, you know, to do a stunt. A movie where the thing never happened, and with the music, and with the thing, and he's walking, and he might be shot, and you're scared, you're at the edge of your seat, you're scared, you don't know this guy, you know that he makes it in the end, you know that he's going to live, because this whole thing is just a movie, and yet you're scared. Why is the things that we know they're not true scare us, and things that we believe to be true, or at least many of us, at least there's percentages that they're true, or we live our life completely as if they're true, they don't scare us at all. We'll play a silly video game on our phone, and we'll be nervous. What's going to happen? Is he going to blip me? Is he going to knock me over? Am I going to smash the fruit? I don't know what the latest thing is, but we're very nervous. And there are people that together get points. We'll stay up hours late at night knowing the next day I'm going to be tired and I'm not going to feel well and it's going to ruin my day. But they'll stay up till 2 or 3 in the morning getting points for nothing that they know doesn't go to anywhere. And yet for schar that we believe in, that there's so many things we do for schar. Everyone paid money to come to yeshiva because you believe there's schar and onesh in the next world. We're learning Torah and it matters because we believe that there's schar. But we don't find ourselves being drawn to stay up till 2 or 3 in the morning and it's hard to stop ourselves. And that schar is something real, and the points we all know isn't real. It's fake, it makes no effect, didn't change anybody's life ever, only hurt it. So, and we know that as a fact. So why? How does this happen? Why are we such confusing creatures? It doesn't make any sense. Now, this isn't just a religious question. You could have somebody who's a chain smoker. He smokes all the time. And his doctor is telling him, you are going to die if you continue this. Your lungs are almost finished. It's stopping up. Whatever it is that makes you die. And the guy continues to smoke, and he's not scared. You ask him, are you endangering yourself? Yes, I'm endangering myself. Are you doing something stupid? I'm doing something stupid. I'm going to try to work on it. But he's not scared. He might be he's killing it. He might be dying right now. And he's not scared. Why is he not scared? But if he watches a movie, he'll be scared of that guy who's going to die, and it's not even true. Or somebody who's an overeater and his arteries are getting clogged, and the doctor says, you eat one more burger and I'm not going to see you anymore. You're going to die. And he's not scared when he eats the next burger. Why is it? We don't make any sense. Human nature is to be scared. So why do we have some of these situations that we're just not scared at all? Let's expand the question a little bit. Man, naturally, is very responsible, we're very concerned, and we're very worried about our future. We want to plan for our future. And our parents and ourselves are willing to take out 20-something years of your life. Some people will go to school for 30 years, 30-something years, and you get a better job, law school, medical school. A person will take a lot of years of their life and spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in order that between the ages of 30 and 65 or whatever it is, he'll have a good salary, be able to support his family. And if you don't do that, you don't go to school, or whatever, then you're not responsible. You're not responsible, and that's not the accepted thing to do in this world. You have to prepare for your future. So why is it that that same human being, most of the world believes that we're going to be judged after 120 years? Why don't we have that same worry, concern, and responsibility for wanting to plan for the day after we die? Why are we so responsible about planning our life, which is limited, but a few decades, right? But we're not as responsible and worried about planning forever afterwards, even though we'll live our life with that belief. If I'll ask any of you, and most people, what's your plan? How are you going to make money? So everyone will have somewhat of a plan. I think I want to work as this. And if you don't want to work as, you don't know what you want to work as yet, you're concerned about it. You want to figure it out. You feel that pressure to figure out what are you going to end up working as? And where are you going to go to school? How are you going to make sure you're going to be able to do that work to be responsible? But if we were to ask most of us, what's your plan? How are you going to know all of halacha? So you can do what Hashem wants. Why you put in this world? So we have a plan? We don't have a plan. Are we worried about it? No. Yeah, it's a good. Slowly I'll do it. Slowly I'll do more and more. Slowly. But we don't go to school. We don't go through school like that. We plan when it comes to school. We have a plan in front of us. But when it comes to why we're in this world, we don't have a plan. Why is it that, and again, I promise you, this isn't Musar. I'm stating a strange thing, and we have to try to explain why does it happen like this. Why is that, and I don't mean to put any of you down because I'm from the same situation as most of the world. Why is it that everybody in this room is very well educated in secular studies. In secular history, we have some pies and big geniuses, math, science. We're very well educated. We did very well in that field. And for some reason, the educational systems, and this isn't putting any, it's putting everything down. But why is it that we can't read a Gemara or read a Rashi and Chumash? Or the first Siman and Shulchan Aruch we're first learning now when we come to Yeshiva in Israel. And yet we believe that's more having to do with why we're in this world. So how did it happen like that? That the things that are important, but not as important, we were super responsible and successful in, but the things that are more important, we and whatever brought us to here, we were so lax about. And yet we would give our life up for the latter, and we wouldn't give our life up for the former. How did it happen like that? Why is the world like that? We know that people, and this now we're going to end the stage of the questionings, hopefully. We know that people don't like to take big risks. We don't like to take big risks. You're not going to put all of your money in something if it's a big risk. Generally, people tend to go for something which is a smaller risk, but less of a return, than a big risk with a chance that maybe they'll get a big return. We try to stay away from big risks. We're nervous about the risks that we take. There's a famous theory or idea, Pascal's theory, that and he asks this to agnostics or non-believers, and he says like this: I don't understand. Nobody could say they're 100% sure that there's no God. So either you live like there's a God, and there's a God, and that was great. You live like there's a God, but there's no God, and what did you lose? You live like there's no God, and there's no God, and okay. Or you live like there's no God, and there is a God, and now you're in big, big, big trouble. That risk was a big risk. So why is naturally a person, when you're faced with those type of risks, you don't opt. You don't opt to take that huge risk that will affect you eternally in a major way when the loss isn't so big. So why is it that we see that most of the world doesn't live like, a lot of the world doesn't live like that? Why is it when it comes to this, the regular rules of how we take risks don't seem to apply? Now let's start to try to answer. When a person wakes up in the morning, I think we all go through this, there's a point where you hear your alarm and you're like, no. So there's something that says, I want to sleep. There's a voice inside of you saying, I want to sleep, but I have to wake up. I want to sleep, but I have to wake up. This is, if you have work, if you're in yeshiva, if you have school, whatever it is. I want to sleep, but I have to wake up. Does anybody say, I want to wake up, but my body's trying to make me sleep? No, you don't think like that. Say, I want to sleep, but I have to wake up. So who's fighting? First of all, are you schizophrenic? Why is you struggling? Wake up or don't wake up? Why do you have this internal fight within you? Who's fighting against you when an animal wakes up? You think there's some internal struggle when an animal wakes up? If he wants to wake up, he wakes up. If not, not finished. There's no internal struggle within him. Why does a human being have an internal struggle within him? So we have an internal struggle between our mind and our body. Our body wants to sleep, our body wants to eat, our body wants to feel the five senses and pleasure all of our five senses. And our mind has more objective thought, knows what's right, what's wrong, what's good, what's healthy, what's responsible, what's not. And which one are we more? Which one of us do we identify with more? We identify with our bodies more. Our bodies have a much stronger hold over all of human beings than our minds do. So when we wake up, everyone will say, I want to sleep, but I have to wake up. I want to sleep. I am my body. But my mind is telling me that I have to wake up. My mind is getting in the way. Who's more correct, the mind or the body? The mind is going to be more correct. And we know, and if you're asking which is more correct, I know the mind is more correct. But we make our decisions much more with our body. How did it happen like this? The Ramchal asks, why is it that, you know, most animals, they're born and they're basically finished products in a very short time. Their mind is developed. But human beings, when they're born, so if you ever see a baby, they're the most selfish, basic human being that could exist. A baby is just thinking about himself, doesn't care about anybody around him, whether he's making them crazy or not, doesn't care how many times it cries for something. A baby will stick everything in its mouth, completely self-absorbed. He's just one chunk of a body. And thank God Hashem makes parents feel that they're so cute and feel so overwhelming amount of love for them, because otherwise they're the most selfish thing. They're just using you and abusing you and taking everything from you. They're not giving you anything. But Hashem puts a natural parental love for the kid to make sure that you care for it. And then only later, as you get older, your mind starts to develop. You start to experience the world in a more higher cognitive type of a way. The baby starts to see. It starts to hear more. It starts to understand what people are saying. It starts to be able to talk. It starts to be able, as it gets older, to understand other people's feelings. And you teach them to care for other people's feelings. And slowly, until the baby comes to be 13, 14, 15, now it can make judgment calls and see things more objectively. Why does it happen like that with a human being? Amchal says that if a person would be born with a brain that was completely developed and see everything clearly, then there'd be no bechira chavshes. We'd have no free will. our mind would see things the same as our body, and it would just be obvious decisions. You would see the outcome of what you're going to do and feel it as strongly as what you feel with your five senses. But since for already 12, 13 years you're going through life feeding into your senses and only feeling your senses, and your mind only develops slowly over the way, so your mind becomes secondary and your body becomes primary. But if it wouldn't happen that way, nobody would have any struggle conquering themselves in any area, because their mind would be just as strong as their senses. Whenever there's a conflict between what our body is telling us and what our mind is telling us, our body is always stronger. Therefore, when a pilot is learning how to fly, a plane, so most accidents when you're flying a plane happen because the pilot is flying based on what he sees and feels out the windows and not based on what the dials are telling him. Because apparently, and I never flew a plane, but apparently it feels different. The messages of the dials are telling you is different than what you feel. You might feel like you're flying upside down, but really you're right side up. You might think you're going east, but really you're going west. And what they train you in the Army to do is to not listen to your senses and only follow the dials. How do they train you to do that? They don't tell you, follow the dials, follow the dials. Everyone repeat after me, follow the dials. They don't do that. They put you in simulations, but when you don't follow the dials, you lose and you hear loud noises and I don't know what. And when you do follow the dials, you see that you end up winning. And slowly you condition yourself to do what the right thing to do is and to fight your senses and overcome it with your mind. When you're in an elevator, a closed elevator, when you're in a closed elevator, so you could go into a skyscraper and go to floor 120, whatever, you're not scared at all. That's your claustrophobic. But you're not scared at all. You fly in a plane, you're not scared at all. Imagine there's a glass tunnel going across the Grand Canyon that you have to walk across, and it's completely clean and clear. Just picture it. You'd be like freaking out the whole way, like going like that. Why? When you're in a plane, you're not scared. When you're in an elevator, you're not scared. Because you're in an elevator and you're in a plane, you don't see it. If you don't see it, your senses aren't being awakened. And there's no conflict between your mind and your body. So, therefore, you can go into the elevator and fine. But when you see the glass tunnel, now your senses are feeling very strong. You have to push yourself to go over that glass tunnel. If you do it many, many times, you'll stop being scared of it. When you're rappelling down a mountain, up a mountain, at first you're very, very scared. Even though you know that the rope that told you could hold many tons more than you. And yet you're still very scared because you feel it. But if you keep on doing it, then you condition yourself not to be scared of it. When I was thinking of another mashal, this one I made up. Imagine you were to go to visit a slaughterhouse. Most people, I think, I could be wrong, but I think, most people, they go to visit a slaughterhouse and they really look at what they do. They see the animal before, they pet it, and they see the animal whimpering and crying, they see them cut off the head and there's blood spurting, and they see them cut open the body and pull different things out. And then it's hard to, you can't eat meat that night, it's hard. A lot of people have a hard time afterwards eating meat. Because what you just saw in front of you, after a while of eating, eventually you'd be away from it, and after a while you'd be able to eat meat again. But if you keep on reminding yourself of that experience and thinking about it, this is gross, this is once a chicken, and you picture it walking around, and picture the noise you used to make, then it's hard to eat chicken again if you think about it. So what at least I try to do is I block it out. I don't even like when people say, I like the leg, I like the, you know, I don't like to hear that. White meat, dark meat, it's fine. But like, when you picture it too much, then it starts to be real. And in this case, in order to eat, you don't want your senses to remind you what this thing actually is. A shochet, who every day is slaughtering, going home and eating meat. Slaughtering, going home and eating meat. He could not care less. Zero sensitivity in that area. So what do we see from over here? That a person could overcome his senses with his mind if he conditions himself. If he constantly sees himself doing actions based on his mind and not on his body, then he's strengthening his mind over his body and he starts to feel things based on his mind, not based on his body. You can make something disgusting for yourself. I was trying to think, Lahavdil, I don't know, maybe, I hope I don't get in trouble, I think you're allowed to say what I'm about to say, but like, back in America, when they used to think that something, you know, was like lower about the blacks, or whatever it is. So I'm sure having them always in the back of the bus, or being slaves, or not being able to walk in the maze, made you feel like there was something gross at them, and you felt gross towards them. And after America started getting more comfortable with them, you start to think, hey, they're normal, they're not so gross. You start, how was Hitler able to be so successful in making Europe be disgusted by the Jews? With all the caricatures and all the rules about what Jews could do, what Jews can't do, you can make something be disgusting for yourself, and you can make something be normal for yourself. But it's a matter of training oneself to do it. When a woman doesn't want to eat, or a man doesn't want to eat, and he can't stop himself from eating different things. So one of the things they do, I think, in Weight Watchers, is they'll show you a movie of how, you know, like, what this meat does within your body and how it oozes everywhere and it's clogging your pores. But they bring it to life in a way that your senses experience it. So she starts to be disgusted by that meat. Chazal say that if a person is overcome with a type of a woman, picture that she's a leather pouch filled with blood and guts. Like, think about how really she's just like a leather pouch filled with blood. If she would die right now, then it wouldn't be so exciting anymore. Same person, hopefully we're all normal, and if she would be also in a dead body, like a second later, it would become disgusting. You know, you want to like go away from it. So picture that now while she's alive, Chazal tells. In other words, if you could train your mind through associations, through contemplating, through your actions, to see things as they really are. There was some gedolim that they would see something not tzenua, they would literally throw up. They got themselves to the point that they saw something not tzenua, it made them throw up because they were so repulsed by such a thing. This is an introduction to Musar Seder, what I'm discussing right now. And I'm discussing now the point of why we learn Musar and the goal in our learning Musar. Our problem, why we're not afraid of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, why we're not concerned in our life that we feel worried to know halacha, that we don't feel worried to be ready for the Yom HaDin when we, after 100 years, that we're going to face a good problem, why is it that we're not worried? Because we don't see these things, they don't speak to our senses, there are things that are in our mind. It's not a matter of emunah, it's not a matter of knowledge, we have to know something more. It's to turn that knowledge that we have in our head and make it more of a life experience. And we do that in two ways. One, by contemplating on it over and over again all the time, thinking of mushels and scenarios and ways to bring it home and bring it alive, like somebody who's trying to make meat, let's say, disgusting for himself, or a woman that wants to go on a diet and she's trying to make the food disgusting for herself. And also by living a certain way, by living within a framework of keeping halacha, of living according to the Torah and according to the mitzvahs, then we build within ourselves proper sensitivities. For example, a person, if they're used to cursing, used to hearing cursing around them, cursing is not such a big deal. Let's say they stay away from cursing completely for a certain amount of time. They don't let themselves curse, and they try to stay away when other people are cursing. So they reach a point where they hear a curse and it bothers them. It feels not nice. Well, they'll curse and they'll feel terrible, so they used to not feel terrible. I'm sure a lot of Shana Beth guys went back to America after Shana Aleph, after a whole year of being a little bit more pure than usual, and you went back to certain scenarios and things that used to not bother you suddenly bothered you. Because when you keep yourself and live a certain way, then you start to accumulate the proper sensitivities and see them as to be seeing them. If a person regularly misses minyan, never goes to minyan or whatever, then it doesn't bother them so much to miss minyan. But when you say you have a streak, for a few weeks you haven't missed minyan, all of a sudden you miss a minyan, it bothers you and it hurts you. And that's appropriate and that's right. So you could take the things that we know in our mind to be true and train ourselves to react to them and to perceive the world in the way that we should be perceiving it. So that's the goal when we're learning Musar. That's why in the beginning of the Messiah Sesharim, he talks about, I'm not here to tell you anything that you don't know already. I'm just telling you things that you know already. You know them very well. So why are you writing the Sefer, he says. I'm writing because usually we push these things to the back of our mind, and this Sefer is to try to help you keep it in the front of your mind. The goal of Musar is to keep that which we know is true, that which we know is important, and live with and live on it, perceive the world that way, and train ourselves to live in that kind of a way. And now, getting ready for Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, what we need to do are the things that put somebody in the mode of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Learn a lot about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Read about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Make calculations to yourself. Think to yourself quietly, and whether through writing, through thinking, what are the things that I need to work on? What are the things that I want to be better in? What are the things that I want to daven for that I'm hoping will go right for me and my family this year? Put yourself in that mode by thinking about these kinds of things, and it will help to put us in the right mode for Rosh Hashanah. One last thing. I should have said this earlier. It's not necessarily the right way to end, but we said that when a baby is born, it's very self-centered, and very much his senses are really all that speaks to him. But we know with kids, we all learned this in cognitive psychology, a kid can't delay gratification. He wants something now. If you say, I'll give it to you in a minute, he'll still scream and cry like, you said a year. You said a minute. And he'll scream and cry like, because he can't wait. You tell a kid not to do something, and he wants to listen to you, and then he just does it anyway. Because he can't think of the ramifications in the future. He just deals and lives in the here and now. He's very self-focused. There are things that we do that program ourselves to revert backwards to what a baby is like. When we are involved with that, feed into our senses in a strong way, so then we make that part of us stronger and stronger. We make it harder to empower our mind over our body, and our body gets stronger and stronger. Why is it that the games that are in the phones anything that they're selling that's not objectively important, the way they work on us, they have psychologies working with these businesses, they figure out the weak points of a human being, what's going to get them, and they work on those. And we buy into it because we're human beings, and they're top psychologists that are working on us. So we fall into that trap, and they work and bring out those bodily instincts that we have and make them stronger and stronger and stronger. They don't strengthen our minds. They strengthen our bodies. They make us more and more closer to what babies are like. It's harder to delay gratification. They give things to us instantly. They make us much more self-focused because our whole world is just within ourselves and not with other people. And they bring us, they're reverting us backwards. So we need to answer that with things that bring us further, by pushing off gratification, by being able to wait, by putting limitations for ourselves, by training ourselves to keep to the things that we believe in. And slowly we can make ourselves stronger in that kind of way.